All right, we're coming to you live from the quarantine den. Gonna start a new series. Gonna be called Business Minus the Bullshit. This one probably gonna be sponsored by Crown Royal Peach.
Crown Royal Peach.
You know what I'm saying? Shout out to them for the limited edition.
They been calling.
I don't even drink, but I had to go ahead and grab some of that limited edition. But like I say, we want to talk about some good topics, pop culture stuff, you know, that have to deal with money, you know, some things that's kind of on the forefront of people's mind right now, you know what I'm saying? We want to talk about a couple of different topics, one being Byron Allen's case against Comcast.
We lost.
And how it was thrown out by the Supreme Court. We also want to talk about Madam C.J. Walker and the self-made, you know, documentary. You know, there's been a lot of feedback about, you know, whether or not she was a thief or, you know, how she had a situation with her husband. And, you know, she got him out of the business because he cheated on her with, you know, her underling and then told her chief rival, you know, how she had stole her formula. And then we're probably also going to talk about a couple of other subjects that might not be on the forefront of the consciousness, but again, you know, kind of popular in culture right now. Probably talk about Meg Thee Stallion and her legal situation. And then...
You talking about with her contract?
Yeah, with her contract.
Yeah, I heard about that.
You know, and then how they bought the bullshit. And then we may talk about how, you know, the viral video that was going around about the guy who was mad because his girlfriend had bought him a rental property as opposed to a Rolex, which is what he really wanted. So, you know, we're going to try to keep it kind of short and sweet, less than 30 minutes, but, you know, if we run over. So, first and foremost, you know, the biggest business that I wanted to talk about was this thing with Byron Allen, you know. And we want to talk about the situation with him and the argument that he had presented before the Supreme Court that he wanted to use the Civil Rights Act of 1866 to present his case as to why he felt that he had legal precedent that Comcast had discriminated against him. So I want to preface all of this about what we're going to be talking about by stating that none of these are going to be fully legal or, you know, research, opinions. And I'm not going to, you know, focus on the facts of the case and why it was thrown out, but more barbershop style of me knowing the facts about, you know, some of the stuff, and then the real world of why.
Can we say golf course style too? You know that in, yeah. You know.
Golf course. You know,
the breeze. You know.
Yeah. Talking about the reality of life.
Right.
Of being in our culture.
No front.
You know what I'm saying? About being in business. And the reality of being in business.
And how we actually are excluded.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
There is no inclusion.
Right.
You know. And we lost the case.
You know, and we, you know, argue whether or not integration or segregation was the key for success for people of color in America. And, you know, we'll talk about, you know, the real life of, I always say that the genius of color slavery was that it immediately allowed the dominant culture to identify who the former slaves were. So when you doing business or working or even just in life in general.
Who they even wasn't.
Right.
Because some wasn't even it.
Right.
Just the power of association.
The power of association of saying, hey, this person is black, so I don't relate to them as much as I do to people that look like me. You know, and we face these demons even in our workplace. We often have to be double as qualified to receive half of the credit, you know what I'm saying, of people who look like the bosses or the oppressors or whatever you want to, colonizers or whatever you want to call them. You know what I'm saying? And then when you figure out nepotism and favoritism amongst friends, then it's like you have to be overqualified in order to get a job versus somebody who might have been in a fraternity with the boss or the owner of the corporation. Or
generations after generations. Really, you know, really we got to have leverage.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's about leverage.
And that's the problem, is that we bought into ownership of everything, but we did it through ownership personally and not through corporations. You know, like I say, with the Byron Allen case, you know, he felt that just because he owned the content, you know, that Comcast would have to come to the table to do business with him because he owned the content that they wanted to fill out the spectrum space that they got. So he felt if he bought up, you know, different stations like the Weather Channel and, you know, Spectrum TV and different channels, that they would eventually come to bargain with him to say, hey, we want to put these channels on our stations, but they don't have to. And that's what we fail to realize, is the people who are the oppressors or the people who have been in business don't have to do business with you. And that's not discrimination. That's not, you know, them leaving you out. It's, I want to do business with people that I'm familiar with or that I know or that I've established a rapport with. You know, that doesn't mean that I have to do business with you. You know what I'm saying? And if there's a negotiation that comes into play, then again, I don't have to spend my money with you. You know what I'm saying?
Now, on the biggest scheme of things, on the biggest scale of things, can you see how that can also be almost the center of all sins? Like, if the world was more on a, and I know that it's a utopia, but if the world was more on a global, tribal state, and actually was more aware and empathized, not sympathized, but empathized with the conditions of the people in their radius, mm-hmm. then their life would essentially become better.
It would, but that's what I'm saying is, like, it's not my responsibility to have to show empathy in business. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, because
should there be a law?
No.
Crime raw.
No, it shouldn't actually be a law. Because at the end of the day, business is about making money.
But then that mean capitalism has no ceilings. And if capitalism has no ceilings, then that mean that it can go beyond moderation. And
it can.
Anything beyond moderation is a sin.
But again, according to who?
According to the laws of nature, of the universe.
No.
Of everything.
No, because again, in every universe, there's going to be an energy of greed amongst somebody. Now, the energy is going to
be balanced. Not balanced, then it's chaos.
I mean, but what I'm saying is, even if it is chaos, then it comes back to a situation where the chaos eventually burns itself and then it burns out. You know what I'm saying? And so as that energy of greed is presented, you know what I'm saying, it's only going to get so far before it kind of burns itself out. Like, particular situation, Hitler, you know, it started off as a nationalist movement. You know, I want my people to come up, my people that's in Germany, you know what I'm saying? And then it became, the power of greed made him take it to other nations, and then it became an arrogance, and then it became, you know, bigger than what it originally was intended for, and it burned out. So that's what happens in business, is you have to have ambition.
You think Hitler shit burned out?
It did.
It's still running.
It still lives, but again.
I saw that chart on my Facebook page showing how Hitler, how most, a large, I ain't gonna say most, I'm gonna say a large percentage of American citizens claim their ancestry as German.
It does. I mean, and that's the thing is, even with those claiming that they
even Trump right now is his heritage is from Germany,
and that very very well may be true, but the actual German nationalist Third Reich movement is not at the forefront right now. You know, there still is an Anglo-American or Anglo movement that's in front. You know what I'm saying? And that's Italian, English, American.
So yeah, the you Anglo know. Got like a little Spanish, you know.
But
like little vibe, kind of, you know.
And that, yeah. And that's the thing, you know, so
with that. The Germans is just, so I guess the Germans is considered what, Aryan?
Yeah.
And the Italians and the British and stuff like that is considered.
They're more of a mulatto people.
More of a, yeah.
A mixed race of people, like, you know, and that's the.
Yeah, Anglo.
That's the thing that, you know. The further and further that we get from a society being in power, the more they become white. And when I say that, you know, the people who were in what is now known Italy and, you know, even a lot of the British nations, they were black people. But because the people who are in power can trace their descendants back through those people, even if they weren't dominant.
Because of the internet age, though, things are revealing itself more and more and more. But, you know, and I was thinking about that earlier, even though it's revealing itself, it's going to take something catastrophic like the coronavirus, you know, to actually make a true correction as a representative of the law of nature. It has to.
No,
I'm like, man, this coronavirus is like Planet of the Apes type shit. Like,
I mean, it's what it is. It's what I've called it. It's a recession. It's a recession. You know what I'm saying? It's a reset of everything. And that's what I want people to take out of this is it's time for you to reset what your goals, what your motives are, especially when it comes to taking care of yourself and your family.
And the fact that you're not included is no inclusion.
Right.
So you know what I'm saying? So your plans need to also be in a way to potentially gain and build leverage.
And
you know, so you can have a voice for real. Because right now you really ain't got a voice.
And that's the thing is, we have to be able to take this time to either teach ourselves or our kids a skill that can be operated from the anonymity of the internet. You know, so whether that be trading on the markets or coding or, you know, setting e-commerce, up e-commerce or any of those skills that will allow
marketing, Google ads.
Yeah, social media marketing. You know, I see people are doing these TikToks, you know, well, teach your kids how to get a sponsored TikTok or become an influencer.
Right.
So that, you know, they can do dances or reviews of products on YouTube. And just like that little kid that's 9 years old making $26 million off of YouTube every year.
You hear me?
Yeah, like.
What? They got deals and shit, toys.
Yeah.
Excuse me for my Portuguese.
Yeah, but again, it's all, you know, this is the time for us to reset. So, like I say, back to the Byron Allen and, you know, the failure of his discrimination lawsuit, you know, against Comcast. Like I say, we have designed our people to be people of grievances. So we take the scars that have come from the advent of slavery, and then we always want to use that as a way for to grieve, to say, hey, you treated us unfairly and you're still treating us unfairly, so you should throw us some money or you should throw us a deal. And at this point, Comcast was essentially like, the hell with that, we gonna fight it, you know. And that's what they did. They fought it all the way to the Supreme Court, because they knew that, again, the burden of you proving discrimination in a content rights deal is gonna be superseded by what you're able to prove. Because all I gotta say is, it just wasn't beneficial for me to add your content to my distribution network. And again, this all comes back to, we don't own the distribution networks. We don't own the manufacturing networks. We don't own the transportation networks. All we've always owned is the content, because we're the greatest entertainers. We're the greatest at performance, you know, whether that be in sport, you know, entertainment, movie, you know, whatever it may be, we always are the brightest lights. And yes, we've gotten into owning the content that they distribute. We have, you know, people that are now producers like Will Smith and Denzel Washington and other highly acclaimed artists who've taken the money that they've gained and set up, you know, distribution. But even Shonda Rhimes or Lena Waithe or any of the prominent showrunners, none of them own a distribution network. You know, none of them own a piece of the internet that they can distribute to other people and be able to gain payments directly. So at the end of the day, we're still going to be at the crutches of those who are paying us to distribute that content. You know, people talk about Oprah and, you know, whether or not she's a sellout, or Puffy or Jay-Z or whoever, as a sellout for them working and making deals for the distribution of their content, for, you know, being able to be the producers of different, you know, entertainment platforms. But at the end of the day, we don't have the money, nor do we have the pull, the political wherewithal, you know, the lobbying power to say, hey, I want to go to the FCC and I want to own my own distribution network, and I want to be able to collect the payment on this distribution network. We don't own those things. We don't own the payment systems that we're able to receive those payments, we still have to go through, you know, the distribution to get our payment. We have to sign and send in letters of direction. So even if you're an independent artist, you're not fully independent. Even if you own your masters, it doesn't really matter. Because, you know, I was listening to Royce the 5'9", and he said, if your music isn't timeless, owning your masters don't mean shit. Because, again, you're going to have to be able to distribute the music that you own the masters of, and then you're going to have to hope that in 15 years, somebody is valuable to somebody. You know what I'm saying? Because those royalty checks and those mechanical rights checks are going to dry up if your music isn't timeless. If it can't be played at stadiums and it can't be played at movies or, you know, different.
Shit, because that nigga know, like, man, nigga, you need to be making stadium music.
Right.
All that other shit.
You know,
you do it a little bit to get on the, just to get your, getting known, but.
Yeah, but even with that, you know, we don't own the distribution, you know, so even if you're an independent artist, guess what? You still have to pay somebody like Universal, like Apple, like Sony, like Warner Brothers to distribute your music and then collect payment for you. And that's what I'm saying is they all already have those avenues and lanes sold up. You know what I'm saying? And because those are sold up and they're not selling, like, they're not selling and they're not buying what we are, what we have. You know, I know people talk about old Dame Dash and him, you know, not wanting to sell out or feeling like Jay-Z sold out or this, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's commendable that, yeah, you know, I'm producing my own films, I'm paying for my own films, and, you know, I'm going direct to the consumer. But just like I tell anybody, if somebody, you know, and like I say, we talking real now. Like, if somebody told me they was going to give me 1,000 bricks and they want $40,000 a piece, if they collect the money, or they could give me 1,000 bricks and they want me to bring them back 25,000, but I got to collect the money, I'm going to go with them collecting the money for me, because at the end of the day, I know that you going to go where the money is going to come from and go to the payment system and get that. You know, I'm not going to be in the business of chasing people down to say, hey, man, you owe me this or this, that, and the other. Or, you know, you got piracy and, you know, we don't like to pay for things, period. So if they got a system where I can just pick up my check, I'm probably going to go with that system. But again, it's the nobility and struggle, as opposed to the grace and taking a win. And I think that because of the vestiges and scars of slavery, we always try to go with the nobility of struggle. So, I mean, again, there's some deeper scarred roots of what happened with Byron Allen. And, you know, I would love to hear, you know, feedback on how people feel. You know, there are some things about the arrogance and the posturing that he did about the fight. And I don't want to go into it because, again, I feel like that's the bullshit of the business. And I'm trying to stay away from the bullshit. So I'm gonna kind of leave that there. The second kind of topic that was kind of hot on my mind was this Madam C.J. Walker documentary.
Mm. What you thought about it?
Self-made, you know. And I like the premise of where they were coming from and telling her story. And again, telling the struggle of what she came from, you know, although I think they could have went more in depth into the details of how she, you know, moved from the South, how she was orphaned. She moved out to Denver, Colorado. She moved back to St. Louis, you know, how she was married, you know, had a kid, and then, you know, but her husband died, and then she met her second husband who became C.J. Walker. And, you know, the story of him buying into her dream, you know, how she was working for Addie Monroe or Addie Malone, who was the real, you know, person, you know, in real life. And, you know, how she was going door to door selling her product, and she became one of her top salespeople. And, you know, she went to her with an idea of how to improve the business process. And I like, you know, the first part of it was that they said that they're going to do a corporation as opposed to Miss Malone's business being really like a large family operation. You know, she went through the process of, you know, perfecting the formula, you know, getting it to be a digestible product that, you know, people had a problem with the smell of the sulfur and, you know, some of the other products in it. So she went with, you know, different, better smelling, you know, additives, and to improve the consistency so it could be, you know, better portable and transportable and that type of thing. So, you know, it was a heart, you know, heartwarming story about, you know, a woman, a black woman, you know, actually becoming like a, and running her business as a Fortune 500 company, you know, like literally, you know, doing quality control, sales, marketing, all of these different things. And I love the visions of that. But some of the, you know, the details of how it, you know, came to be, and some of the, I don't know if it was an arrogance or it was a uppityness to it that she had about the pride of her being self-made and, you know, aggrandizing and showing grandiosity towards the people that helped her realize her vision, including her husband, you know, and how he invested in her dream and picked up and moved to Indianapolis, you know, and enlisted his family and friends, you know what I'm saying, to help grow her business. But as he would say, it was always me and my whenever she spoke about the business. And she kind of excluded him in wanting to be the forefront of the business, whereas he had skills in the marketing arena. Like, it doesn't really talk about how he was a marketing exec for a lot of the big black newspapers of the day, you know, and he had run, you know, national marketing campaigns, you know what I'm saying, for a lot of those different newspapers, which at that time, there might have been 1,000 newspapers across the nation that were, you know, tied up to, you know, the black cause, you know. And so that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And, you know, of course, they sensationalized the affairs that he had, you know, with her top, you know, salesperson, and, you know, how he betrayed her to go back to Miss Malone, Miss Monroe, you know, to tell her the secret that she had stolen her formula, you know. And I think, you know, I always talk about incorporate your love as a hashtag. And I think,
did they divorce?
Yeah, they ended up divorcing.
Oh, shit. Did he make a lot of money, or it was really all like matter money?
Well, it was like, they don't really talk about it, but essentially she kind of cut him out of the corporation. You know what I'm saying? So we don't really know. I think she ended up paying him, you know, some money, you know, as a settlement in the divorce or whatnot. But, you know, at the end of the day, he probably should have been a shareholder in that corporation. You know, and then, you know, everybody talks about, well, she was a thief. No, she wasn't. Because in corporate America...
Tell me, because she took the formula.
Right. You know, in corporate America, they have a thing called reverse engineering. So if I can figure out the products that are in your product, the ingredients in your product, and then I can, you know, recreate that product, make an improvement, one ingredient is different.
Yeah.
Then I'm not violating your patent. I'm not violating your trademark, any of that, you know, because I've actually created a different product. You know, if you got a formula for a product and, like I say, I don't like how it smells, so I can create a different, you know, speck of formula, and then I add aloe so it doesn't smell, or and now that knocks off the percentages of that product, of the product that I made, that's not your product. You know, especially in chemical formulas and different things like that, you know, they're
How did she get the formula?
Well, she knew what the formula was, you know, like the different products. So she was literally trying different things, different percentages of this. You know, she tried and she put lye in it and it was like, no, that burns. So I take the lye out, I put something else in. I may put eucalyptus in it so it's cooler. Or, you know, I may, you know, try something different, you know what I'm saying, until I can kind of figure out what it is. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, even if I got the actual chemical formula, I still, you know, because that's the other thing is that they don't really talk about was that, you know, Miss Malone was actually a chemist. You know what I'm saying? So she had used her chemistry training, you know, to create this product.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they don't really go into that enough to me to show that how ingenious Miss Malone was as far as her developing, you know, beauty schools and becoming one of the top or first, you know, beauty school operators for black people in black hair in America. You know,
was she black? Or she was
well, mixed? She was
a mulatto. Again,
she was a mulatto. Well, what they said was she was the product of two slaves, but there was the thought that she might have been that the master had raped her mother.
Yeah.
But on paper, her parents were two slaves.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? But it's just like, again, with the records.
So she was black in the movie?
Well, she was a light-skinned girl in the movie.
Yeah, she was passing for white.
Yeah, pretty really? Much. You know, and it showed some of the colorism, the hatred that her mother had for her because her mother was a black Indian. You know, we don't know. You know, Native American type, you know what I'm saying? So all of those things were intimated in the story. But again, we have to understand that when history is told, it's told from the perspective of the winner. It's always told.
Or it could be told from the perspective of the witness, you know.
But
I mean, at the same time.
Even from the witness.
Because the winner and the loser might actually could die. And ain't nobody left but the witness. But and I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying.
So,
and I agree.
So that's, you know, kind of my take on that. And it's like, I think that we have to let go of a lot of the hate that we have for enterprise and capitalism because a lot of the wealth was built on the backs of our free labor. So we stopped valuing winning at business because we perceive that everybody's gotten an advantage. You know what I'm saying?
Is that the truth?
I mean, again, the truth becomes your vision of the facts. Like, I always say that there are facts and then there's the truth. Your interpretation of the facts is your truth.
Yeah, I can go for that.
Period. You know,
that's a thousand.
Like, I can't tell you how to feel. And I can't tell you how to interpret the facts. I can only present them to you, and then we discuss your version of the fact and my version of the fact. Right. And we try to come to a consensus that if two touch and agree, as they say in the Bible or whatever, then that becomes the truth. You know, like, if three people see the same event, see the same facts,
yeah,
and then they agree, because those three people saw it, that becomes the truth.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's not disputable by the people who saw it. So that's what that is. Now, what happens from there becomes, okay, well, you know, even in the story of self-made, was she self-made or was she the byproduct of people that invested in her and then she became the product? Hmm. You know, her name, her likeness became the product. You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't by her own volition.
Right.
Because it's a lot of people that invested in that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Like, just like Obama said, you didn't build this infrastructure. You know?
I mean, but according to the words of Jay-Z, shit, you made me make another me.
I mean, but
like,
even...
You said you made me, so Adam, CJ Walker, she put him like, shit, if you say you made me, then shit, just make another me.
And that's true. But, again, Rome wasn't built in a day, and it wasn't built by one man either.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree with it. I mean... So that pretty much saying Dan Dash was right in that situation. But right don't mean you end up on top.
You know, I used to always talk.
If ending up on top is right to you, then that's more important than.
But who determines right?
Who determines right? It's all on the eye of the beholder.
Exactly. Like, there's a set of facts, and then it's determined by you what's the truth.
Right.
So, if you say, hey man, I want to distribute myself because I got that power, I got that pull, but I say, nah man, I ain't really about the collection of my money when I know somebody that's got a system of how they gonna collect my money for me and I'm just gonna give them a percentage.
Right.
And it's gonna be more money.
It's less risk, more guaranteed success.
Yeah, like.
You know, but, you know, I am tied to some change. I mean, it's like neither one of them is wrong.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I used to, you know,
could have talked about it a little bit.
I don't know. I think sometimes relationships are just supposed to end because the set of facts that happen are supposed to happen the way they happen. Like I say, I used to talk to my mom.
So you think Jane had no idea what was finna happen?
I don't know. He might have. You know what I'm saying? I can't speak for him. You know what I'm saying? He might have had inside information. He may have.
You think if that was the one clause that helped them buy them out, do you and he was the weakest link.
But I mean, what describes a weaker link? Like,
but again, okay, somebody who take the deal when we got a pack. What, like, we allowed that clause only because we felt like that none of us would have ever did that.
Again, if we come into...
I mean, it's like snitching.
But it's not, though. What I'm saying is, there's an honor, like...
So it ain't, you said it right, there's an honor amongst thieves.
It ain't even an honor amongst thieves, but there is no honor in going broke. There's no honor in that. I don't give a damn what
they
you said.
Like they was gonna go broke.
They might have. You know what I'm saying? Because it starts to pile up, and it's like, okay. You know, when I look at things like the interview that Kanye did with Sway, and he said, "Sway, you don't know." You know, and he was talking about how he had spent $53 million of his own money to try to put out his own line. And what it taught him was that they're going to overcharge you for things that they would do for an established operation to do for you. And that was the reason that he went broke. Not because his product wasn't fire. He didn't have the marketing. He didn't have the distribution connections, and he trying to plug into the connection. And those people are saying, hey, you know, we make pants for Gucci, right? Or we make jeans for Gucci. Well, we done got the connection so we can get our pants made in our jeans made in Africa for $5 a pair. But I'm going to charge you $50 a pair to produce your jeans. And then you got to pay shipping. You got to pay taxes. You got to pay import and duties. You got to pay all of these things to sell your jeans, whereas their profit margin is 80%. Yours is only 12 or 13. You know, something small that then gets ate up by taxes or, you know, shrinkage or...
Who you with now? Who Kanye with now?
He with Adidas.
Okay.
And then that's what taught him that...
Adidas gave him some inclusion.
The Adidas gave him 100% inclusion. He owns his line. He gets 20% of their distributed sales. And then he gets 100% of his sales minus his expenses. You know what I'm saying?
So he won a hell of a deal with
Adidas. He won a hell of a deal. And guess what? He went from $53 million in debt to making $150 million. So where's the arm? Which one?
But he had to step out there first.
He did, but
spend that 53 for them to take him serious. And
to an extent. But what I'm saying is,
because if he would have went in there looking like a city girl, then you know what I'm saying. He would have been talking like Megan Thee Stallion.
Right, and that's, you know, I mean, but that's a perfect segue.
Before we cut it on y'all, we gonna because we mix corporate with urban. What's your take? We gonna end it with the Stallion.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue to this Megan Thee Stallion contract, because it's a lot of popular culture myth in enhancement about, you know, Jay Prince and his involvement with Carl.
Who is Carl?
Carl is the owner of her label.
Okay.
He's a former baseball player. He got a baby with the girl Evelyn from Housewives of Miami or whatever the hell show.
Okay, she Spanish shit. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever show that she was on. And, but he from Houston. He started up a label. It's an independent label. And, you know, they gave her a deal that some people say, hey, it was a good deal. She got 40%. They get 60%. You know, they invested in her, you know, supposedly, you know, millions of dollars.
Right.
And, you know, she was supposed to get 40% of her royalties. Mechanical, she had a 360 deal, you know, that they would collect on her performances, you know, merch and all of that. And, you know, people say, well, she didn't read a contract and, you know, how dumb are you? And I say to that.
What's she crying for then? If she had 40%, she was nothing.
But that's the problem, is because you think that she's nothing. Like,
but she was nothing.
But no.
40 though.
No, that's not true either. Because, see, unlike most.
Okay, I ain't going to say nothing. Because I don't want to call nobody nothing. Everybody is something.
No.
What I'm saying is she's making more now than what she was then.
But that's the bullshit. See, I've been out to Houston. I met Megan and her mother, who was like the house mom at, it was either Treasures of Eli, right? So at the time, her mom was her manager. They ride.
So her people got cash.
What you mean?
Her people got money?
Not really. Like I say, she was an old stripper who became like the manager of the girls.
Yeah.
At the strip club. So she might have been making, you know, 30, 40, you know, thousand a year. You know what I'm saying? But when Megan was 15, 16 years old, she was rapping in the parking lot of V-Live. You know what I'm saying? And we was doing, you know, different little promotions out there. And she was like, yeah, this my daughter. She rap. And she would rap on command. You know what I'm saying? So then her mom was a manager. She started taking her around different studios, you know, different little shows, all of that.
Yeah.
So when Carl came into the picture and was like, hey, we're going to give you a $50,000 advance. We're going to invest in you. You're going to get you're going to get 40%. We're going to get 60, you know. Yeah. They invested some money in her. They, you know, got that her money, her.
So wasn't that a good deal?
It is a good deal on the base, on the surface. But it's not a good deal if it doesn't get negotiated and administered in good faith.
Yeah, now that minister could be deep because they could be overcharging her for
everything. Exactly. So, yeah,
so now her net is looking like.
And that, again, like, again, like, so that's nut. Why this was the perfect segue from Kanye to Megan Thee Stallion.
But she went with the system.
I mean, she went with the system. But again, if you telling me, right, I'm paying you. I got to pay for my engineering. I got to pay for productions. I got to pay for, you know what I'm saying, guest features, all of these things, you know, wardrobe, makeup, all of that. And that's got to come out of that. But you don't have the records of what I spent, or you got records of something that's absorbent, whereas normally you charging me $100 an hour for engineering. Now you charging me $1,000 an hour for engineering.
Oh, shit.
Are you charging me $1,000 for production, mixing and mastering, as opposed to when we came into this, this is what you were charging me? Or you now you saying that I had to spend $25,000 or $50,000 to get you on this show or to get you the radio spots when we know that these radio spots only cost $5,000 because when you buy them in bulk, they give you a good-ass rate. Right. And that's where the bullshit comes in.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm saying? And that's why when she went to the court to file an injunction and you don't have the records to say what you actually spent. And then you want to say, well, she ain't paid us for none of her performances since she joined Roc Nation. Well, you ain't showed me no audit of what I done actually made on my mechanicals and publishing. You ain't showed me what my recoupable expenses are. So, again, you don't want to pay me, but I'm going to hold the money that I am getting from you until we can come together and say, hey, I made this off of production. I mean, off of shows and performances. I owe you this. But what do you owe me?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
What do you owe me?
What do you owe me? Like, and what's the real number of what you owe me?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? See, people don't realize.
Not all that bluff.
Yeah.
See, you like Megan, too. Yeah. So you really defending Megan.
What I'm saying is.
Does she still remember you?
Probably not. I mean, probably because not. It's like I met her one night in a parking lot talking to her mama about this show that we was doing.
Wow, I never knew that she was going to grow up to be
with right. Steve, you know what I'm saying? Like, there was just some 15, 16-year-old girl that was like, you know, young. She wasn't as fine as she is now. You know what I'm saying? But she was like, she was a bigger girl. You know what I'm saying? Already forming. You know what I'm saying? But she was talking real nasty gutter shit. And come to find out, she, you know, really wasn't fucking yet. But she was already, she already had her persona of what she wanted to be.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like I say, literally in the parking lot of V-Live, like, just rapping.
Straight up.
Just a bundle of energy rapping about niggas gotta pay and, you know what I'm saying, all the, you know what I'm saying? But
mama
like,
with it.
Yeah, because, like I say, her mama had been, like, was a veteran stripper. You know what I'm saying?
Her mama was a veteran stripper.
Yeah, she was a veteran stripper, like, had been doing it 15, 20 years. Yeah, like, on the scene for real. Yeah, so,
yeah.
I mean, and that's what I'm saying is, it has nothing to do with whether or not you like or who feel like is right, you know, the whole Jay Prince and, you know, him threatening Jay-Z and
all. Oh, Jay Prince was threatening Jay-Z?
Yeah, because he said that he felt like that Jay-Z and Roc Nation had come and stolen her from, you know, Carl, as far as, you know, that was his artist, you know, and that they weren't giving him credit for developing her. You know what I'm saying? Which.
But Roc Nation is just his, her manager, right?
Yeah, Roc Nation is only her management. You know, they're not her record label. You know what I'm saying? And that's the other thing that I have to tell people is when you have recording contracts and publishing, when you set up to become part of one of the guilds, pretty much, ASCAP, CSAC,
yeah,
or BMI. Blank. Yeah.
Blanket companies, yeah.
Yeah, BMI. What happens and how you get paid is not the same. They following a pattern of 9 to 12 months of previous royalties. So you might get a check in March, but it was from your royalties from last March or last June. You know what I'm saying? What you had in spends. So as those checks come in, then they're to be distributed, you know, because if you're a publisher, if you get the publishing, then your record label gets, you know, 50. In normal cases, they get 50% of that. You know, unless you done got a real good deal and you done set up your own publishing company and all of that, they get, you know, half of your publishing, and then you get half of the artist rights. And one quarter of it essentially goes to the writers. One quarter goes to the producer. You know, whoever that may be. And again, these are things that happen where people are added in as producers that really ain't produce shit.
Yeah.
You know, and this is another way that
shit, I done seen artists. I done heard of artists getting as low as 16%, and producers getting like 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
you know, that's why the split sheets are important. You know what I'm saying? Because you could be all the way in the hole just because somebody done said, "Oh well, I'm a producer now." You know.
And producer could be multiple things. They could really just be the person that pulled everybody in the room. And,
right.
And, put it together. That's you know, what DJ Khaled do a lot.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is.
You don't make no beats. You just.
And that's.
Arrange shit.
And that's what I'm saying is that's the lesson of, like I say, the business minus the bullshit is, you know, everybody can say, well, she ain't read her contract. Ha, ha, ha. You know, that's funny, but it's not. You know, because, like I say, if a person doesn't administer your contract in good faith,
right,
then I am going to sue you.
Right. That's just like saying, that's just like numbers don't lie. But shit, it also depends on who made up the numbers.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I always say, numbers don't lie, but they don't always tell the whole truth either. Yep. So, you know, we have to define, you know, what we interpret as the facts versus what's the actual truth. So, that's, again, the first of the business minus the bullshit podcast.
Crown Raw.
Peach is the sponsor. Like
Peach, Peach Tree.
You know, I don't drink, but because the world might end, I had to go ahead and grab a bottle of that special edition. You know, so don't forget, we still got the Genius Talks podcast, and we got the Rich Forever podcast. They all going to be coming to you real soon. We definitely creating content, so we'll holler at you.
Minus the bullshit.
Minus the bullshit.